Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. I wanted to go over a question I've been asked pretty frequently as we educate about the importance of immunotherapy, why we would consider something like allergy testing, when it's appropriate to start something like immunotherapy. First off, I do have to give a shout out to my wonderful crew at ESAVS, European School of Advanced Veterinary Studies, but specifically the Asia program. I had a wonderful time teaching their last course, which was such an honor. They had been waiting, I think, 4 years because of the pandemic to take this last class to finish their sixth class, which got them their certificate. So all of my wonderful friends I met from all over Southeast Asia finishing the course in Bangkok, shout out to you. It was one of the coolest experiences in my career just to see people so excited to learn about dermatology. And obviously, they saw my emotions flow when I got to give them their certificates. It was such an honor. So shout out to my ESAVS Asia crew, and just congratulations on everything you accomplished and for being so patient to finish that last course. As we jump into immunotherapy, the thing I really want to focus on today, because I think there's still some confusion around it, is the difference between administration, specifically subcutaneous and sublingual, because at least in the United States, that's the most common form of immunotherapy that is started. There are certain places in the US, and then more commonly in Europe, you'll hear of intralymphatic, which you can do. In the US, we have more aqueous-based allergens compared to like aluminum precipitate, which is sometimes used in Europe. So there are protocols, and I'm potentially considering starting some intralymphatic protocols. But day-to-day clinical practice, most of us are going to be choosing between subcutaneous and sublingual. So that's what we're going to focus on today. But what is the difference? Does it matter? Is one more efficacious than the other? I can never talk about immunotherapy and allergy testing without starting out with the importance of remember to know why you are allergy testing. Back to the basics, please do not allergy test if you have not ruled out the appropriate things. Make sure we have no ectoparasites. We don't want to be allergy testing a dog with scabies or flea allergy dermatitis. So no ectoparasites. Remember, go back to isoxazolines. Rule out things like infection. You know, if you rule out infection and the pet's not itchy, say once you get rid of a pyoderma or malassezia dermatitis, really take a step back and look at that pet and say, does allergies make sense here? Do we consider something like an endocrinopathy that caused infection or something else that's going on? Do we look on a really crusty, itchy pet and there's no infection at all and there's just a bunch of neutrophils? Maybe we're dealing something like acantholytic keratinocytes are seen under the microscope and we actually have a pemphigus case. So please just make sure if you're going to allergy test, we know the pet has atopic dermatitis or feline atopic skin syndrome. We've ruled out things that are not allergies. We've ruled out ectoparasites, ruled out food allergy. We are allergy testing because we're going to start immunotherapy. I know that's something that I say a lot, but I know we get new listeners to the podcast, and it's just really, really important for us to know why we are allergy testing these pets. Remember, allergies are very expensive. We don't want to waste our owner's money. We want to be utilizing things that we know are going to be helpful for that pet and for that owner. If an owner does not want to pursue immunotherapy, I personally don't recommend that we allergy test. We'll focus on everything else we have with multimodal therapy, like pharmaceuticals, topicals, nutrition, things that we can help that pet with. But we don't want to spend money on an allergy test just to not be able to utilize it. So by far and away, number one, I just want to make sure it's not a diagnostic test. We already know they have environmental allergies. We are allergy testing to start immunotherapy. So when we're talking about the difference between subcutaneous and sublingual, some people have their preferences. There are studies in the literature, but it's always really hard to do immunotherapy studies because there's so many variables, right? It takes a long time to work. Not every dog or cat responds the same. Sometimes we find that they're better, but they're not fully off other medications. So it's really hard to judge success. And it's just really hard because it's long-term therapy. So those studies get quite complicated. But looking in the literature, subcutaneous versus sublingual, and an anecdotal experience too, it does seem to be very similar in efficacy. So I don't personally feel like one is better than the other. My conversation with the owner is always about what is possible for them. What are the benefits and the downfalls of either form of immunotherapy? Let's start with subcutaneous because it's been around the longest. You know, the benefit is most of the time we can reduce frequency over time, especially when we get to maintenance therapy. So there's two ways that we can start subcutaneous immunotherapy. The traditional or conventional way, every clinic, every company has different schedules that you can follow for that. So, you know, starting with a dilute vial, doing every other day, certain amounts increasing, then moving to a more concentrated vial. And then once you get to that more concentrated vial in kind of that maximum amount, then eventually getting to the point of maintenance dosing. So you may start vial one, you know, every other day, working your way up in amount each shot, and then going to the more concentrated version, again, working the way up in amount, and then getting to the point where in my hands, I feel like most cases end up with a shot every 1 to 2 weeks. It varies. There's different reasons we change the frequency, and that is something you want to be comfortable with if you're going to pursue immunotherapy. But for the most part, most of my cases, you know, once a week, once every other week, kind of depending on their response to it. So pro is the fact that they don't have to do it as frequently. Another option we have to start subcutaneous, and again, every clinic is different, but something that many dermatologists offer is what's called rush immunotherapy or rapid induction. Essentially, that is when the pet is hospitalized for the day. They have an IV catheter in place, and we give a series of injections within that day. So we may give a shot every 30 minutes in increasing amounts, but they're being monitored with temperature, pulse, respiration. You know, for us, every 30 minutes, we're looking at their mucous membranes and we're just looking for reactions. So most of them do very well, but we have to monitor them because we are giving so many shots within a day. But once they leave the clinic, often they can just start on maintenance therapy. And there's some, you know, thought that these pets might respond faster, but it's another cost to the owner because clearly we have to charge more for having them monitored that day, technician time, doctor time, IV catheter. And you also have to have a pet who's willing, right? Like I've had pets where I can't offer it because it's not the right decision for them. That pet may be really stressed in the clinic. They're going to be really resistant to us doing all of this monitoring and injections. So then it's not the right decision. But if we have a pet who's not as stressed and that is an option, it's something else that can be considered. No matter which way we start subcutaneous immunotherapy, again, long-term, nice part about it, not having to do things as frequently. So you don't have to give it as often as things like sublingual immunotherapy. If pets are resistant to taking oral things, like I think of my cat patients and some of my equine patients, they tend to really don't mind injections, it seems like. Not all cats, but many don't seem to mind compared to giving medications or something oral every day. So for some pets, injections are actually quite easy and more easy for owners to administer and do. You know, con is if you have an owner who's needle phobic, then that's probably not going to be a good option. Or if you have a pet that gets really, really nervous about needles or starts fighting the owner, then even if it's less frequent, it might not be that realistic for the owner. We do have a small amount of owners who bring us their pet to administer injections because it just gets more difficult for them, but they don't mind. Like they live close to the clinic. They come as a quick drop off with our technicians, you know, once every 2 weeks. And that's how we give the immunotherapy. But it just has to be something that's realistic for the owner. If they live farther away, if it's not something that's, you know, able to be set up in your clinic, then that could be complicated or not something that you can offer. Sublingual immunotherapy, one of the benefits is that it's not an injection, so you just give it orally, but it is given more often. So I would say most protocols either have daily administration, it comes in a little bottle with a pump, you're supposed to kind of put it in the cheek pouch or somewhere in the mucous membranes. You administer it once daily to twice daily, depending on your protocol. You still can see reactions to sublingual immunotherapy, but not maybe as commonly, though. Honestly, we don't see it that often with subcutaneous. But if I do have pets who have a reaction to subcutaneous, like they say they do get urticaria, then you can try to switch to sublingual, but it's still pretty rare even with subcutaneous. With sublingual, if they're going to have a reaction, then often they'll kind of facial rub. So they'll kind of really scratch at their face after administration. And there are actually some studies that if they don't respond to one form, say they don't respond to subcutaneous, you could switch them to sublingual after a year if owners are willing. Only downfall is cost. And they may respond better to one form than the other. So that is an option that always can be considered. Another kind of interesting controversial benefit, because there's a lot of discussion about that. We do know that the glycerin, so most of the time there's glycerin within sublingual immunotherapy that stabilizes it. You know, we don't want any of these formulations to get hot. Sometimes we'll have them stored on the fridge to be safe, but really it's not that big of an issue with sublingual because the glycerin acts as a preservative. Now, there's controversy in our dermatology college about the importance of molds and pollens being mixed together. So really the fact that molds could break down, well, we know to some degree breaks down pollens, but we don't know if it really is clinically matters to that pet. So you will see very different styles between dermatologists of either splitting things like molds and mites in one vial, pollen separate, or just mixing them all together in one. Even within our company, people do it differently, and we always have discussions about this. You know, I don't tend to separate them because I'm just trying to make it easier for owners, unless they had a really severely like mold allergy dog that need a lot of molds in it, then maybe. But there's others that always do, even within the clinic I work at, just in case. So it's something that we always kind of joke about and argue about and debate about, because we don't have a lot of proof if it really clinically matters for that pet. However, the reason I bring it up is that glycerin kind of stabilizes it. So if you had a pet who had a lot of mold positives, you weren't sure if you're going to separate them, sublingual, it doesn't seem to be a big issue. So that is something that always could be considered in those really unique situations. Either way, again, efficacy long-term seems to be very similar. So to me, it's about what the owner can do, what's realistic with their schedule, what the pet is able to do. But always make sure, however you're going to set up immunotherapy, you talk to that owner about the expectations. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. I kind of tell owners, I have A students, B and C students, and F students, because I just want them to realize when we throw around numbers like 70 to 75% success rate, it doesn't mean there's a 70 to 75% chance that their pet's going to be off everything within a year. It's just that we're going to see some sort of benefit, whether it is they are off medications, we have to use less medications, they don't break out as much, they don't progress with their allergies. And you can check out past episodes of the podcast where we dive into that a bit more. But it is really important just to set the stage for the owner to make sure it is the right decision for them. Because allergy testing and immunotherapy is awesome and wonderful and we love it, but it's not the right decision for every owner. And as we've talked about, the importance of dermatology is the uniqueness of it, that it's not cookie cutter, that we have to look at every individual allergic pet and decide the right plan for them, whatever that looks like. So just really, really think about that. And same when you're selecting immunotherapy, make sure you're comfortable with it, that they're going to be committed to try it for at least a year, that they know if it is helpful, that pet will likely stay on it lifelong, long term, and that you feel comfortable kind of knowing when it is successful and what You can do it to manipulate things like dosing. When it comes to formulation, just ask those questions. You know, do you feel comfortable with injections? Do you think your pet would allow you to do it? You know, what's your schedule like? I've had some people where if they travel a lot, they don't want to do a daily immunotherapy sublingual form. So then we will do injections and kind of figure out if that's realistic for them. So all of those things really do matter. But the good news is efficacy seems to be pretty similar. And then we can kind of decide what's right for that pet.